Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie.
I'm Michael Brooks.
On Point is where we highlight someone getting it right. And actually, this week we have two someones.
Persons.
Two persons.
Individuals.
That are gracing the mic, the studio with us today. And we have Afdal Aziz and Bobby Jones, the authors of Good is the New Cool.
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 What's up, gentlemen?
What's up?
All right.
How you doing?
Thanks for being with us.
Of course.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So, first, let's get started with just give us a brief introduction as to like who you are, how you guys came together. Afdal, you can get us started.
Sure. Yeah. So Bobby and I have been friends for a while now. We both used to work together when I was at Heineken, and Bobby and I have been working in marketing for a long time, almost a couple of decades. And we had this moment like about 3 or 4 years ago when we were just talking to each other about work and what's going on. And we kind of both expressed the same idea that there had to be like a more meaningful way of doing what we were doing. You know, we both were having a lot of fun, I think, you know, doing marketing and kind of enjoying the craft of it. But we realized that, you know, we got used to doing cool stuff. But after a while, like, just doing cool stuff wasn't enough, you know, and we were lucky enough to like work with culture, work with like really amazing artists and collaborate and stuff. But it felt like there was another kind of level you could take it to. And we started looking around for, you know, examples of brands and people who were doing things that inspired us. And that was really kind of the genesis of how we got started on this conversation that led to the book.
I just got to say real quick, and there will be a photo of this at Two Dope Boys Instagram, at Two Dope Boys Pod on Twitter. Afdal is wearing like this very dope kind of like Godfather in Panama hat, and that just needs to be notated. All right, go ahead. I'm a culture guy too. I notice things.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Dapper Don over here.
Very much so.
This is called having a ball spot in the winter.
It's called like, but that's heavy. It's like, we're going to be doing good. I like that. It's like Brando gets in on the socially responsible business game.
Yeah, man. So yeah, my story, you know, my background is in marketing. I started long-time entrepreneur, started first businesses when I was 18 and set a marketing company called Direct Impulse. And that company, you know, kind of got me on this pathway to really bridging the gap between corporate America and youth culture. And so from that time, you know, a large part of our role in this was really translating what was happening in the streets and what was happening within youth culture and how that was shaping the way young people were looking at brands, looking at creativity and basically the roles that brands can play and connect with them in meaningful ways. And so from there, you know, that company got acquired and I wound up at a larger agency. And eventually that agency was working on Heineken's business. And so a lot of my work was really a continuation of that. And so eventually it expanded to global. And so we would go to different parts of the world. We would go to China. We would go to Brazil. We would go to Europe, you know, and we would really try to understand what was happening in the streets and how that was really shaping the influences and values and interests of this generation. And one of the things that as we were going and doing a lot of this work and as we were connected with brands, we were starting to see this kind of shift where young people were much more conscious of what was happening in the world beyond just music and fashion and art. They was also conscious of what was happening on a social level and a socioeconomic level. And as social media and those things began to expand, it became much more conscious. And so for me, you know, I got to the point where, you know, I loved the work that I was doing, but I was just getting kind of burnt out from the constant grind and the pressure of, you know, we've all been in agency world in some ways, and Afdal's on the client side, so he's the source of our anxiety and stress. But you know,
he's just leaning back. You can see this, like Bobby's leaning in, like it was very stressful.
It was stressful.
And Afdal's just like, it actually wasn't that bad.
This was our dynamic. It was like, I need this by 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, yeah.
I feel like that doesn't really capture it. Yeah.
But you know, we just started to. I just got to the point where I really wanted to connect with this generation's desire to change the world. And so I got to a point where I was just like, I just wanted to kind of redesign my life, redesign my career. And at the same time, I wanted to help other people to do the same in whatever way it was we could. And so this book you know, became this kind of journey for us. It was a 3-year journey of us really connecting with people who were at the same point of trying to figure out how to have their work and their creativity and their talents be forces for good, right where they were. And our intent was to create this and have it be of service to the people that were struggling with the same things we were. And so, you know, here we are. And, you know, I think we've created something that is connecting with people, and hopefully it helps a lot of people.
Good is the New Cool. That's the name of the book. We've mentioned it before. Like, kind of walk us through a little bit of that process. Like, you mentioned what got you to thinking about, you know, this is something that's going to be relevant, is something that's needed. But I'm sure it started as just sort of an idea, a gut feeling. How did that idea and feeling start to translate into actually words on the page?
Yeah, it's interesting. You can read the title a number of different ways, right? And so there's one articulation of it which talks about how for this generation who've grown up with like peak Kardashian, right? Like with a celebrity culture that's an overdrive, who have grown up so savvy about marketing. Like, I would walk into, you know, focus groups in the Midwest and have 25-year-old, you know, kids say, "Hey, I'm not your demographic." And you'd be like, how do you know that? And you realize that these guys have grown up thinking of themselves as brands. They've grown up thinking about all the ways that brands try to trick them. They know how to create images. They know how to create a persona, which they do every day on social media. So if you're a brand, the tricks that you used to play to be cool, like hiring a celebrity to be your spokesperson or, you know, giving a really glossy image, that doesn't work with these guys anymore because they can see right through it, right? So there's something deeper that you have to do as a brand in order to win their trust, in order to win their admiration. And our hypothesis going into this was you needed to actually add value. That's the good bit of the good is a new cool. And you can add value in lots of different ways, right? You can be inspirational. You can provide some sort of, you know, guidance and education and learning. You can provide substance as well. And we started to see that there was something happening where the most successful brands in the world, the Teslas, the Warby Parkers, the Tom Shoes, were brands who'd figured out how to be both good and cool. And there was something where they'd figured out how to add value to people's lives through design and through kind of like the imagery, certainly, which is a crucial part of it. But they'd also figured out the other part of it, which was the social impact part of it, which was, and it was and is really important to this audience as well. So the good is a new cool is kind of like our observation, if you will, of this kind of seismic tectonic shift that's happening in society where the old values are being replaced by other ones as well. So that's one articulation of it. And then the other part, which we saw as we dive deeper into the book, is really the role of pop culture in helping people access their inner desire to want to do good as well. And that's where we started to see what we call the new nonprofits, organizations like Pencils of Promise or Charity Water or Global Citizen, who learned how to use the power of cool to kind of really galvanize people to get involved, which we hadn't seen before as well. Like the previous generation of nonprofits, the Greenpeaces, the Amnesty Internationals, they do amazing work, but they kind of relied on people's inner civic nature to participate. And what these new kind of, this new wave of almost startups in the nonprofit world, they were acting like brands. They knew how to use culture. They knew how to use data. So the other part of good is a new cool is how good is using cool, in order to kind of get more, kind of more participants as well.
And, you know, I would just add, you know, one of the things, you know, you're talking about kind of you know, the process and what we, you know, and everything in terms of creating the book. I think one of the big epiphanies for us when we were writing was that, you know, we started and we were writing about brands. We were really thinking about what brands were doing. And there was a point that we realized that we didn't want to tell stories of brands. We wanted to tell stories of people. We wanted to tell stories of individuals and how they realized the moment, whether it was just a moment of opportunity, whether it was a moment of obligation, whether it was just kind of like this inspiration, like what was the moment where they realized that through their work, they can do something that was not only really cool, but also really meaningful, and how they found that moment and then how they leveraged that to create something that really moved the needle, both from a business standpoint and also from a social standpoint. And when we really started to have these conversations, it became really interesting, the spectrum of stories. And, you know, because on one hand, you may have some people like Arya Finger, who, you know, CEO of Do Something, who knew her purpose when she was like, you know, 8, 9 years old. And then you have other people who are like, in their 40s and still like, I don't really know if I know my purpose, but I know I can do something really cool that can help people. And so it was just like this really interesting spectrum. And so we wanted to, you know, to really dive into those stories. And I think that really made for a very rich and relatable set of stories for people to dive into.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a time of mashup, right? And yeah. I think that what two things that kind of jumped out at me in reading the book and talking to you guys now is that, number one, that coolness, it sort of is going both ways. Like, the nonprofits needed to learn how to connect with culture and to like position things in a broader way, right? But then on the flip side, with brands, especially with more savvy consumers, with people, I think, not just thinking demographically, but Phil and I always talk about shared values communities, which transcend demographics because you're aligning around values, not necessarily it is an identity, but it's a different way of identity when we usually talk about identity. Then brands actually have to be more coherent themselves. So nonprofits needed to get on the ball, but then it's like, at the same time, can, you know, like, brands can't like greenwash in the same way anymore. Yeah. Or even brands that do some very good things and work with culture in really good ways. Like, I think it's an outstanding question for Nike. They have incredible initiatives on sustainability. Their interaction with culture is seamless. Like, it's not just impressive. But at the same time, like, the ongoing labor issues to me are like, it's an ethical issue, but it's also, in the era of brands that you guys are talking about, it actually becomes fundamental to the brand proposition itself, because it's like, you have to be coherent through your supply chain. So it almost feels like Good is the New Cool is pushing that nonprofit world to get cool, and it's pushing the brand world to be like, you all actually really need to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a great quote in the book which sums up the kind of attitude of, you know, millennials and Gen Z, which is, every dollar you spend is a vote for the kind of world you want.
Right.
And they really understand the power.
Is that Francis Moore Lappe quote?
It's Anne Lappe, yeah.
Anne Lappe.
She's a writer, yeah.
And shout out, go to the Dope Boys archive, Anthony Lappe, who we had on, her son.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh.
Yeah, vice showrunner.
Yeah.
All the worlds connect.
Yeah.
Nice.
Branding.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, we live in an era of transparency. We live in an era where consumers can call bullshit on a brand.
Yep.
And often do, right? We live in an era.
And should.
And
brands should want that.
And brands should want that, because it shows you that people are paying attention, right? So in an era where you have peer-to-peer recommendations outweighing, you know, in many cases, flashy marketing or advertising in the final decision, you want to earn people's trust, you know. So one of the chapters in the book is called People Are the New Media. And so what we mean by that is, if you can actually solve problems in people's lives and do it in a way that is meaningful and tangible, people will tell other people about your brand. That's what you got to aim for. Now, in order to do that, you can't fake it. You can't make it up. You actually have to have a great product, you know, great experiences around the product, whether it's digital or physical experiences. You have to get everything right. And the reward, if you do get everything right, is that spontaneous, genuine recommendation where you go, this is an amazing pair of sneakers, or this is an amazing pair of glasses. You should buy it because of X, Y, and Z. And the brands that we're seeing, you know, we use Warby Parker as a great example of that, right? So if in 6 years, this brand went from launching to being valued at $1 billion. Now, they did it because they were cool. They figured out design. They had a great social impact story. So, you know, buy a pair, give a pair, that whole thing. They have a great store experience. They have a great home try-on experience. The pricing is right. They got all of those things right. And that's the reward for brands who manage to figure it out.
People always focus on your chink. Like, if they got all of it right and it's like, yeah, but the price point's off, or yeah, but the stores are whack. That's like where all of the energy, it's like water,
yeah,
flow to the chink.
Yeah.
I think that I was just wondering if we could backtrack just for a second, because you guys talk a lot about this, the way this connects with like finding your purpose. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a process in this as well, in terms of like I know you said some people kind of know it out of the gate, other people are in their 40s, they still don't really know it, but like, do you have tips or thoughts about like orienting your compass that way?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because you know, we both went through our own kind of exploration, yeah, self exploration, and mine's was probably for the close to between 6 months and a year of just like really trying to figure it out. And you know, I was fortunate that my old boss and mentor, shout out to True Pettigrew, actually became a person who was focused on helping people to do that. Mm. And so I was very lucky in that sense. And so I reached out to him at a point in which I was really struggling with it. And so we worked together literally like every week. And so the things that we would go through, we would just list out what we call like your life accounts, like your finance, your health, your spirituality, your family, like all these things. And within each one of those, it was just, what is it that's most important within these things? Mm-hmm. And even, and as we like listed those things out, I think it was 8 of them, then we began to kind of go through this process. It was like, NCAA tournament style. So it was like 8 of them, then you get to the final 4, then you get awesome. To like the 2, and then so it's like spirituality and health, pick one, like which one wins.
I like that. Finance. Is that really a contradiction?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's a prioritization.
Okay. Yeah, so you go
Duke or NC State.
Exactly.
Heart disease or spiritual growth. It's time.
Yeah. And it's like
settled today.
You start to like, you really, it forces you to say, all right, which one is most important? It means like, you know, they're all important, but which one is the most important? Which is one? And for me, It was finding purpose. I was the most important thing at that point in my life was getting clarity. And so, you know, we went through a process of really understanding the things that were important just in my day to day life, the things that were important from a value set. And at the end of it was like this really important moment where the next task was to write out my statement of purpose. And I really struggled with it. Mm-hmm. Like, I struggled with it for weeks. I would, like, write out, you know, things that I thought sounded good. You know, my purpose is to make the world a better place. So, mm-hmm. I think the purpose, and it was just like, you know, and it was, you could just tell it just didn't feel right. And so I remembered this story, you know, and I talk about it in the book that really crystallized it for me. And it was that story in which, you know, the story which called The Two Wolves, where, you know, the grandfather's talking to his grandson. He asked him, you know, you talk about these two wolves that are at war, and the grandson asks which wolf wins, you know, between the good one and the evil one. And, you know, the grandfather says the one that you choose to feed. Mm. And it was at a point where, you know, similar to where we are now, we're kind of like the culture and everything around us. I was becoming increasingly conscious of how much we feed the bad in our culture and in our society, yeah, and often in ourselves. And that story really clarified to me that my purpose was to feed the good. It actually connected me to my work that I've been doing ever since I was a teenager, which is marketing and engaging young people. And so what it became really clear to me that my purpose was feeding the good in young people. And that, and that's what guides me today. You know, my work now is I'm a CMO at a nonprofit at Peace First, which works with young people around the world. And so, you know, that was my journey to finding my purpose. And I think, you know, different individuals and organizations kind of find their pathway, but that was my story.
And we think that's what chapter one in the book, or principle number one, is know your purpose, right? And that applies on an individual level. Like, if you're reading this book, the most important thing you can do is figure out what you're meant to be doing with your time. If you operate on the assumption that time is more valuable than money, then there's plenty of people telling you how to spend your money, but not very many places that tell you how to spend your time.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? And so it's figuring out what your purpose is, like Bobby's journey was, and then making sure that the organization you work for is in sync with that. Because a lot of the time, a lot of the pain that people have is when their purpose is out of sync with the larger organization that they have. Or worse still, that organization doesn't have a purpose, beyond making money.
Right.
I think that's what happens a lot of the time, that you're seeing organizations struggle with turnover and people just not wanting to come. The best talent doesn't want to work for companies that just want to make money. They have so many options today. They can go start their own company. They can go and start a podcast. They can do whatever they want, right?
That's a great point.
So it's really important that whatever you are, whether you are a brand, a nonprofit, a culture creator, whatever that is, know your purpose and make sure that you attract people who have common purpose to that organization.
I think that's an interesting segue because it brings us back to some of an earlier point that you made about the savvy nature of young consumers. And you walk into a room and they already know about branding, the language of branding, the thought process of branding. And I'll date myself, like, you know, I think about, and we talk about this on the show, this seemingly disconnect in culture spaces where we have what we call the cultural prime directive. And part of it is, can culture exist in spaces where it can be, allow itself to have fits and starts and be nurtured and not have to have a commercial end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you talk about finding that purpose, does that still leave room for exploration, for those fits and starts that are so necessary sometimes in personal growth and professional growth, in a manner of speaking?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, we talked about, you know, one of the questions that we ask everyone that we interviewed, it was a Mark Twain quote where we say the two most important days in your life, one, the day you are born, and the second is the day you realize why. And so we started each interview with that question of why. And it was interesting for those who help shape culture. You know, Jason Maiden is one of them that we talked to in the book. And he was just, you know, for him, you know, the idea was that, you know, he feels as though he has a different purpose in different seasons of his life. And so from a creative standpoint, you know, that sense of, you know, purpose being aligned with specific moments of his life absolutely liberates him creatively to just figure out what's the best expression of this particular purpose at this particular point in my life, and how can I use that to make the biggest difference to the largest number of people possible. And that for him, that shifts. And so I think to your point in terms of kind of like the openness and fluidity of culture and the ability for it to kind of morph and evolve and for us to kind of move along with it, you know, we've absolutely seen it. And I think it's a beautiful thing when it happens. And I think you know, it's like everything else. It makes sense when you look back and it's, you know, you see these people like your Quincy Joneses of the world and all these people, and you see this amazing body of work that they've done. And I'm sure if you deconstructed, there was things that they were just particularly called to do and inspired to do at those particular times. So, you know, we've seen it being very fluid and very, you know, versatile. And we think that it's beautiful when it happens that way.
And just to build on what Bobby was saying, that's the other thing. When we started writing this book, it was about people and brands. And then we expanded it to look at the world of nonprofits and culture creators, because that's the world that we're both familiar with. And we spotted something really interesting happening, which is that if you take just this year, you know, you had Beyonce at the Super Bowl, Kendrick Lamar at the Grammys, you had Lady Gaga at the Oscars. These are all A-list artists at the top of their game using the biggest pop culture moments in American culture to talk about social issues. And that hadn't happened for a while, right? There was something in the zeitgeist that said, I'm not just an artist, I'm an activist. You know, and you know, in the book we interview Bobby Campbell, who's Lady Gaga's manager, and he says, you know, the most legendary artists have not just an artistic imagination, but a moral imagination, which is, this is how society should be. And what's exciting about this moment is those culture creators are choosing to kind of almost spend their capital on things that are close to them. I can't think of a single artist who isn't an activist in some way. I'm not just talking about the ones who've made it. I'm talking about the 22-year-old who's coming up. They want to use their gift for good as well. And that's why we think that there's something bigger happening, this seismic shift we talk about, where if you put the right brands, the right artists, and the right nonprofits who all have common purpose together, something really powerful can happen. right? Because the brands have the resources and the reach. The nonprofits have the depth of knowledge to fix an issue and really get into it. And of course, have like armies of people who are like passionate about it. And then the artists are the secret sauce. They're the ones who can make it magnetic. They're the ones who can like galvanize people to get involved in a cause or an issue. And so what's really interesting is the intersection of those three forces coming together in ways that we haven't seen before to kind of create this shift.
And of course, artists include podcast hosts. So
absolutely.
Holla at us.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm totally serious. I love when I say something that I mean and I could pass it off as a quasi joke. Low key, for real. I mean, I want to run this, and I know this is a little long, but I do want to just fit this in, and we could do this in a super condensed way, because when I was reading it, you guys do have this several-step process. All of the themes you're talking about connect so closely with what we're doing and what we're about in terms of this show, in terms of our larger projects that we do with these communion events that we put together along with our friend and collaborator Chuck Welch over at Rupture Consulting that we do. And I was just actually really curious. We've never done this with anybody before who's consulted or worked. But like, if you were running and you've spent some time with us, you've listened to the show a bit, if you had to, from this framework, coach the two dope boys, what would that look like?
Yeah. We're not immune to taking constructive thought processes. The one thing.
I'm mercenary. Yeah. I treat people like a buffet.
All right, so Bobby, pop. You want to go back and forth on this?
Yeah.
All right. So we have in the book, if you read the book, Good Is a New Cool, available at all bookstores now. There's a 7-step process.
And online.
Wherever like, books are sold.
Link to on the show notes and everything. Everybody's covered.
We said, listen, there's a new model you need to create, right? Which is, if you're a brand or organization or a podcast, like, and you want to like mobilize stuff, here's 7 things. If you do in the right sequence, you could probably figure it out, right? So number one is know your purpose. So if you had to summarize the purpose of the podcast in 2 words, what would those be?
Cultural impact.
Spread dopeness,
all right? So then, there you go. It's super clear. You know what your goal is.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, with that clarity, then the next step is find your allies. So from there, it's really about, okay, if you're looking at cultural impact and if you're looking about spreading dopeness, like, who are the individuals and the communities and existing networks that are already doing that?
Yep.
And then how do you build alliances with them? How do you proclaim and state what you believe and what your purpose is in a way that attracts them? And then how do you identify who those people are and find ways to contribute to those?
Let's build an alliance, guys.
Yeah.
There you go.
Coalition.
Right, all right.
Coalition.
Alliance built. Okay. Love it.
Number 3 is think citizens, not consumers. And I think you do that by the topics you pick. Yeah, you talk about the civic issues of today. So I think that's easy, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the next one is lead with the cool, you know, and I think you guys have done very well with the even the branding of it.
Yeah,
you know,
making sure our guests are always on point.
Sure the guests are
so
on
that's
point.
A big step in the right direction.
Exactly. But I mean, even if the podcast was called, you know, two great guys hosting intellectually curious conversations, it'd be a very different.
We got to do a remix.
I fell asleep in the middle of that sentence.
Welcome back to Time. Great guys. Hosting intellectually stimulating conversations.
But you're like, it's two dope boys in a podcast. Like, you leave with the cool. You let it be known where you're from, the cultural kind of sensibility that you have, and then you get the right people to lean in. So that's the next part of it.
Number 5 is don't advertise, solve problems. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you can actually, this is the adding value bit to it, right? So it's like, don't tell people how great you are, help them fix something in their life, and they'll tell other people how great you are. Right. That's the sum total of it.
Yeah, and as a perfect segue to, you know, people are the new media. You know, this is this era where social media and the people that love this podcast and love what you guys are doing and are part of these networks, these are ones that spread the word. You know, we're here as part of that network. Yeah. You know, it was people that saw that what we were doing and knew what you guys were doing and said, you two need to sit down and do this.
So, definitely. Yep. And a shout out to, speaking about allies, like CC, one of our crew.
Yes.
You know, she put us back in touch and we've known each other for a while. Yeah. So it's all closing those loops, closing little those C's. Circles.
Yeah. That's what I call it.
Little C's. Shout out to Little C's.
And then number seven is back up the promise with the proof. And then maybe it was what, like, shout out to Chuck Welsh, who I met this morning and had a great conversation with.
Oh, awesome. Oh, nice.
And so your community events, maybe backing up the promise with the proof, right? If you want to build that community and you want to add value by bringing people together, then it goes from beyond being a podcast, it goes into being something that people can experience. And that's really powerful because it means you guys are putting your money where your mouth is and your time where your mouth is to back it up as well. So yeah, if you follow those things, then you can build something really strong and powerful.
And I just want to say, because I want to spell everything out sometimes for everybody, what I loved about this too is that there's a lot of people listen to the show that are in brands, that are in advertising. This is obviously that are creatives, that are activists. This is obviously relevant, but it's also, you know, one of the best reviews we ever got on iTunes was some dude who was like, I think he said somewhere in the Midwest, and he said, "No, I thought I was a little too old and a little too, you know, not what I don't remember what word he used, but like, I didn't think I could necessarily be comfortable with this show, but I love it. And now I never miss an episode because, of course, these conversations are relevant for everybody." And in a similar way, this same model you guys just mapped, like, this can help you, like, with your, you know, recycling thing you're trying to set up in your community. This can help you, like, launch your yoga studio. Like, yeah, it works up, yeah, the chain. These from the largest product launch to the most, like, grassroots to individual pursuit.
And that's, works. And that's rare that you have that sort of, you have these ideas and concepts that are actionable and also relatable.
Yeah.
So I think we're really glad that you guys were able to come through and be a part of the show. And I always think about what are listeners going to get value from when they walk away from this. And I think this is one of those
definitely
times when they're going to walk away with some actionable things.
It's hard when we have to tell guests that they've provided no value. So I'm glad that we didn't have to do that with you.
That's
all.
That's why I bought the hat, yeah, just in case.
Yeah. 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 You were trying, you were trying to intimidate us a little
no,
bit.
No, I was like, if we don't add value with the words, at least the hat can provide.
Oh, okay, yeah, the hat can provide some entertainment. Okay.
There'll be some aesthetic value.
Yeah, exactly.
But we covered it all.
Everybody, wow, check out the book. Thank you, fellas. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, man. This was dope. Yeah. And love what you guys are doing, man. Love the movement. Happy to be part of it.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
More soon. See you next week on More Two Dope Boys. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.